It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
It's always a pleasure to have the folks from Harvell and Collins on Tuesday mornings. As a matter of fact, we had a call from someone who was interested in knowing, making sure that you were going to be here, Cecil and Wes. So with that, good morning. Appreciate your time
good
as
morning,
always.
Lockwood. How are
morning,
you?
Morning, Lockwood.
Doing well. Doing well. I understand we're talking about court orders and judgments. Is that the topic for the morning?
Yes, that's a little bit of an interesting twist, but there is a distinction between those words, between someone having an order from the court and then, of course, you know, the judgment. So let's kind of distinguish those two concepts this morning.
All right. If you're looking at distinguishing between, my first question is, what is the purpose of the two efforts?
Right. So, Lockwood, again, good morning. Good to hear your voice.
Thanks, Wes.
This morning, probably the best way to discuss this is probably in the context of a case that I've dealt with recently. We oftentimes try to talk about particular cases that we deal with. So that folks kind of bring it into some type of context. When we can talk about cases, of course, we don't use names and we don't, you know, really talk about pending cases. But a particular case in which the dynamic between an order and a judgment, really was front and center, was simply a situation where there was a divorce. And in the divorce, the husband and wife entered a settlement agreement that was converted to a court order. In that settlement agreement, court order required the parties to sign all documents that were necessary to do all the things in what they agreed, such as convey the marital home to the husband, and he takes on all the debts. Okay, you kind of following me there? That means that the wife would have to sign a deed to follow through with her obligation to give the marital home to the husband. Well, that all got put in place, and then a little bit of time went by, say a year, and then the husband wanted to sell the home. Well, at that point in time, it was learned that that deed was never signed. So it's a simple process. You go back to the wife and you provide the deed, and she is by court order required to sign it. Not to make this too complicated, but in this situation, the wife had already remarried. So her husband, by North Carolina law, would be required to sign the deed too, to convey full title. Okay? Well, he wasn't willing to do that. And so we went through a process of bringing the husband, meaning the second husband, into the lawsuit, and because we have to have jurisdiction over him, so we brought him into the lawsuit and then brought a proper motion for the title to be transferred over to the first husband, because that's what was agreed on anyway. He still wouldn't agree to do that. So then we brought a motion for recovery of attorney's fees and cost, because he's now a party, but he's not doing the things that are required to be done consistent with the original court order. Well, what ended up happening there is that the court ordered him, he didn't enter a judgment, but ordered him to pay my client's attorney's fees and cost. So that's the factual scenario. So the difference between a money judgment, such as, and we kind of know about money judgments, that's when you don't pay your credit card, or that's when you're sued by someone and they get a judgment against you. That's a situation where those type of money judgments are subject to a standard collection process, There are certain exemptions where you can't take but certain property away from folks to cover the judgment. Those, in many cases, are dischargeable in a bankruptcy proceeding. So that's your typical what folks think about, where you go to court and you win your case and you get a judgment against someone.
Right.
Contrast that with a court order, such as what we received in the case I just described. The court order is not the type of situation where it doesn't really affect your credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not subject to this collectability process. Okay, there's not exemptions of property. But if the person who is subject to the court order does not comply with the order of the court, then the remedy is contempt.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case I described, this individual lives in a different state, which makes a little difference. We can talk about that in a minute. And so the court gave him a certain amount of time to pay these attorney's fees and costs. Well, if he doesn't do that, the remedy will be a motion for contempt, which would almost certainly be granted. The result of that would be that he would be placed in jail or incarcerated, held there until he purges himself of the contempt, meaning he would have to pay the attorney's fees and cost, and that would be his ticket to get out of jail. You see, the big difference between a court order and a judgment, we don't have debtor's prison
right.
in the United States.
Right.
If you don't pay your bills, you don't go to jail. But if you're in a situation where a judge has entered an order against you to take certain actions, and that could be pay attorney's fees, it could be, get out of the house, it could
return certain property.
Well, return property. It could be to stay away from someone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A domestic relations type order. It could be a whole host of things. In this case, it happens to be a money judgment for attorney's fees and cost. But we don't have a debtor's prison, but we do have a situation where if you violate the order of the court, that the remedy is to be placed in jail until you are until you purge yourself of the contempt, which is meaning you fix whatever the problem is that you're not doing.
If I understand this correctly, a quick question for you, Wes and Cecil, is then in essence the court order, I will use this term, actually has more teeth. Then a judgment is just a conclusion, but the court order is sort of an issue in motion. Am I thinking correctly in that description?
In many cases, yes. I would also contrast, with regard to the judgment and the order, is that, and I think I mentioned this, let me make it clear, though, that the court order in most cases is not dischargeable.
Right.
In bankruptcy.
Uh-huh.
So, fine, you can go forward with the bankruptcy. You're still subject to the order of the court, so you may go forward with the bankruptcy and still get picked up and taken to jail until you purge yourself of this obligation. So in many cases, yes, the court order does have, as you say, more teeth. There is a formal process, of course, and many processes for collecting on a money judgment, but in many cases, that's frustrating,
mm-hmm.
especially when you have someone who's in another state. As I mentioned, those were the facts here. This individual, the second husband, does reside in another state, so the process for collecting on a money judgment would have been to domesticate the judgment, if there was one, in North Carolina in the other state.
Mm-hmm.
That would require hiring legal counsel in the other state, going through their state laws with regard to collections, a lot of expense, delay headache. Okay? Well, contrast that with our court order. Well, even if this person is in another state, if the person is found to be in contempt, he would be extradited back to this state and held for contempt until he purges himself. So I would say, under this scenario, much more, as you say, teeth. In the effect of this. The reality is most times when you have a court order for recovery of attorney's fees or amount of money, that type of thing, folks find the money.
All right.
And because there's really not much you can do other than find the money, work out a payment plan, do something like that.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to come back to this in a moment. We'll take a quick break. We've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And, gentlemen, we've also got a caller standing by. We're going to get to that in a moment. But first, I want to take a quick break. We're going to talk. We're talking about judgment versus court order. Fascinating difference here. You're listening to Coastal Daybreak. And, again, Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And by the way, if you want to get more information about this and other items we're talking about, you can give them a call directly, 252 area code 726-9050, that's 726-9050, or go online to harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com. We have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins on the line with us, and I know we've got a caller standing by. Robert, we're going to get to you in a moment. We want to finish the conversation on the issue of court order versus a judgment. And Wes, I was intrigued that, you know, really, from a perspective of the plaintiff, a court order has a lot more, a lot more force behind it.
Oh, right.
What happens in the case of going outside of the state, though? And do you still, as you mentioned, do you have to domesticate a court order as well as you did with a judgment?
It's a different process that you go through, where it's more of a criminal type process. Ooh. Where you have, I mean, let's say that you have someone who has to be extradited from another state based on, you know, a criminal situation. They've turned themselves in another state, but they violated laws of this state, for example. Then that criminal process brings them back here. Now, I'm not a criminal defense attorney. And I'm no expert on that process, but it's my understanding that there is a process that the state basically will take care of in order to have the person brought back here. And that's good news for the plaintiffs of the world, because they don't have to go, you know, spend time, effort, money with an attorney to go through a domestication process relative to an attorney being you know, representing them here and in the other state. Okay. So folks listening, Lockwood, could, you know, who maybe have a judgment or dealt with this situation before, could be thinking, well, gosh, I'd sure like to go get a court order instead of a judgment. Well, it doesn't work that way.
That's what I was wondering.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I think the courts would be a little bit more raucous if we were hauling people off to jail for failing to pay their bills.
Right.
Little incivility there, but you have to have specific facts and circumstances, and you have to have a statute on point to be able to get a court order, okay, under these circumstances. Here, in this case that I brought up, we have a very clear situation where we have an individual who frustrated the operation of an existing court order.
Mm-hmm.
He made it difficult for the equitable distribution process to be completed, which was already settled. There is a particular statute under North Carolina General Statute 50, which is the statute that deals with equitable distribution, that indicates that if a party does that, then the court may sanction that party including reasonable cost and attorney's fees.
Mm-hmm.
So at the beginning, he was not a party. You see, he wasn't under the jurisdiction of the court. So I had to go through the unusual process of having a summons issued against him, amending the pleadings, bringing him in as a party, because he wasn't even in the pick at the beginning, because this case initially was about husband and wife, first
right.
husband and wife who were being divorced. But because he was frustrating the process, we brought him into the jurisdiction of the court and then applied that statute, and that was a proper application of the statute, giving the court the authority to assess those reasonable attorney's fees and cost. And so if you just have a situation where you have a credit card that you owe and you're being sued on it, or you have a breach of contract and you're being sued, or there's a negligence case and you're being sued, those are all things that just end up being, in the event you prevail, a money judgment,
mm-hmm.
completely different thing as we've talked about. So you have to have those specific facts in order to, get that court order requiring the payment or requiring certain action. Overall, I would say the story, though, is that folks need to recognize that if you've got a court order entered against you requiring you to do something or not doing something, well, if you want to stay out of jail, you better follow it.
Absolutely. The other quick question before we go to the
yep.
break, is there a time limit on a court order?
Well, Lockwood, there can be a time limit placed in the order, conform within 10 days, or immediately cease and desist, or, within 24 hours, remove certain property from a property. These orders, again, this has been a great conversation. They require people to take action. Even in the estates arena, Lockwood, the clerk of court via the superior court of the county in which the estate is pending can order the executor to file an inventory,
uh-huh.
to file a final accounting, to show cause why an accounting has not been filed, and that they are to file it within 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they don't do that, they are, as Wes has described, in contempt of an order of the superior court, and that means that the sheriff can go pick them up in their residence and put them in jail for a few days until they can find their way clear to file an accounting and or a report with the court. The clerk of court can order that an executor return property to the estate,
mm-hmm.
that the executor, do any course of different activities. But again, those would be in the context of a court order, much like we've talked today, that has some real action and teeth behind it versus a judgment.
Okay.
Is that caller still there?
Yeah, he is. I'll tell you what. Okay. Let me take a quick break. We're going to get that caller on. Robert Newbern, stand by. We're going to get you. We've got Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here with us this morning here on Let's Talk Legal. We have Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us this morning, and Robert in Newbern called in. Robert, we've got about 2 minutes. Very quickly, what have you got on your mind here?
Okay, yes, Mr. Harvell, are you there? This is Robert from Newbern. I came to see you. Actually, I called the radio station, talked to you on the phone. You said you couldn't help me because you need to see the will. I brought the will to you. We only spent a few moments together about changing the locks. Okay, since that time, you said that if there's something else that will come up, to let me know. Well, something has come up, and it started on the 15th of last month. My sister sending me text messages. Can you send me pictures of each room of the house, including upstairs, bathroom, front porch, back, blah, 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 blah. Do I have to comply with this? She's calling me now, her tenant, and the last text message that I got yesterday was and I'll read it for you because I screenshot it and copied them. Hey, Rob, send me those pictures, please. I'm obligated to find out if this house is being maintained, and I need pictures of proof. Otherwise, per the will, I will have put up for sale. What's my right, and does she have that ability to sweep this house from under me? I have copies of everything. I paid the taxes. I paid the building.
Hold on, Robert. Let's let Cecil and Wes respond to that very quickly. Go ahead, Cecil.
You're welcome to come back and see me again, but I remember you. I remember the document. You have a life estate in that property. You recall that. There's nothing in the world your sister's going to be able to do to frustrate your ability to reside on that property and enjoy it for the remainder of your life. Now, she does have the right, if you will, to make sure that your property is not in waste. There's not being deterioration. There's not being, you know, excessive wear and tear, that you're taking care of the property, things of that nature. So you need to take some photographs, respond in writing.
I got them. I was just wondering, after the phone call, I'll go ahead and send them to her.
That you have documentation, keep your file, like we discussed before, and say, you know, sister, here are the photographs. The property is being well maintained. There's not anything terrible happening to the property. I'm being cautious with the property and doing usual and customary things to maintain the property. The important thing is that that be in writing and that you keep a copy of that.
All right.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I got photos, obviously, stored in my phone, blah, blah, blah. I can always put them to a computer and print them. But, I forgot the question I was going to ask. I know I'm on short time.
Well,
here,
I've answered your question. You know, the most important thing, though, my friend, is to get those photos printed out and do your response, a few sentences, a paragraph or so, to your sister, telling her everything is okay. And you send that to her, maybe certified mail, so that you have a copy of exactly what you sent to your sister. You do need to communicate to her that you are maintaining the property in a reasonable way.
All right.
Lockwood, I think there was a question that you mentioned offline about changing locks.
Right.
If he has a life estate, he has the right to change the locks.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
That treats it as his own if it's life estate.
That's correct. Yes.
Outstanding. Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law. By the way, the website, harvellandcollins.com. And that number, remember, 252 area code 726-9050. That's 726-9050. Cecil, Wes, thanks very much for being with us this morning.
Thank you.